This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. 75 years ago this month, the United States dropped two atomic bombs on the Japanese cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Tens of thousands of Japanese civilians were killed in the bombings and their aftermath. Author Kathleen Birkinshaw's mother survived the bombing in Hiroshima. She was 12. Kathleen commemorates her mother's story in the young adult novel, The Last Cherry Blossom. The book educates young readers about the human stories behind the history, and Kathleen joins us now. Welcome to The State of Things.
Hello, Frank. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you for joining us and telling your story. Tell us about your mom. What's her name, and where did she grow up?
My mom's name was Toshiko, and her last name was Ishikawa in Hiroshima, and she came to the United States in 1959, but the thing that I mostly talk about is when she was 12 years old, when she was in Hiroshima when the bomb was dropped.
And tell us about that, because your mom used to say she grew up in Tokyo. How did you find out she was a Hiroshima survivor?
Yes. Well, when I was 11, I started to put together that August she had these nightmares, and she would have these horrible blood-curdling screams. And I remember that particular year, that the summer before, she had the same thing. And I kind of pestered her to ask her, you know, if there was something in August. And that's when she finally told me that I was actually born in Hiroshima, but I lost my family and my home and friends to the atomic bombing. And then she didn't want to elaborate. It was still too much to talk about. And then she said, do not tell anyone.
And you're, 11 at the time, and you mm-hmm. hear this, you know, this news, but she's asked you not to, and it's pretty clear to you she doesn't want to talk. What do you do at that moment? You're clearly curious.
I was curious, and I was very overwhelmed because I didn't hear too much of the atomic bombing, you know, because obviously she wouldn't have talked about it. So at 11, the time that it really seemed to hit me is in high school when we read John Hersey's book, Hiroshima, and that was like the first time I really got an idea of what she may have witnessed. And I just remember I was reading it in my room and I came running out and I had tears in my eyes and I asked her, was it like this? And she didn't want to look at it and she just said, it was hellish. And that's all she would say then. And she also said, please don't tell your teacher. I'm not able to talk about it in public.
Well, so your novel, The Last Cherry Blossom, follows the life of a girl named Yuriko before and after the bombing, and it is historical fiction, but of course based on your mother's story. What pieces of her life did you want to highlight in this novel?
I think it was very important that I wanted to show that she had a lot of the same feelings and issues happening in her family that other 12-year-old and older teens would have, as well as in the United States, the same as in Japan. Because the real big common thing is, in addition to just saying what happened with the nuclear weapon, I wanted to show what the culture was of Japan at that time, the mindset of the people at that time, how they looked at things politically, to show a little the difference between that and the Allied side, but then to also show that the children in Japan, like my mom, you know, they loved their families, they loved their friends, they worried what might happen to them, and they wished for peace. That was all the same things that the Allied children were feeling as well. So I really wanted to kind of bring that into it, also to bring that humanity piece to it. Because, you know, the two paragraphs in a textbook today with a mushroom cloud picture, that can't give you that emotional impact of the human beings that were under that mushroom cloud.
And so you started the story before the bombing to, again, set up life, what passed for normal life at that time, because, of course, you're still in the middle of a war. But to give us that sense, a little bit more of a context, what was your research process like for this novel?
Obviously, for some of the stuff, I did interview my mother, but I also, it was a little difficult at first to find life in daily life in Japan during World War II written in English, and I don't read Japanese, so I had to do some more digging, and I finally found, actually, on eBay, they had weeded books that actually were translated from Japanese into English about daily life, and I found as many books as I could of other survivors. And so that I could get a real feel of what else was there other than what my mother would have seen, what the political landscape was, the propaganda, and trying to be able to put that all in so that the reader would get a pretty good view of what was happening. And I'm very, I try to be very meticulous in my research, and I want to be sure that what I write in there, if I mentioned something that it actually existed at that time, it would have been in the household. So it took a lot of time to try to get that aspect out of it. And then I also, by pouring in the emotion of what my mother's life was like at 12 and when it happened and how she lost things. And, one of the things that I also learned was that, Japan had invaded Manchuria in 1931. My mom was born in 32. So she really knew nothing else other than war in the background. And I felt that it would also give the reader a sense that by the time 1945 came, they were really dwindling on their resources. Hiroshima was no longer that big military port. In fact, the majority were elderly women and children that were there. So I wanted to kind of give that piece of it as well so they could see how the bomb affected the citizens that it dropped on and what was left there and what they had to endure afterwards in that. So and it was really important.
Go ahead. It was important. You were going to say.
I was just going to say that it was really important to start it beforehand to really give that piece of it, because you really need to know what they had to really understand what they lost.
How much of your mother's story had you heard, and how much had she talked about by the time you begin looking at these other narratives that, to do your research?
Well, I really didn't hear the majority of what happened until I was 30. I was very ill, and I was in the hospital over a month. And when I returned home, I had trouble walking. My parents came to help take care of me. My daughter was 4 then. And that's when she started to tell me, when I was diagnosed with reflex sympathetic dystrophy, which the physicians attribute to the radiation that my mother was exposed to in the bombing, and it will affect my walking. It's a chronic neurological progressive pain disease. And she started to tell me what actually happened that day, because she wanted to give me that inspiration and show that, she was going to kill herself. But she didn't, and she's so glad that she didn't, because she wouldn't have had me, and she wouldn't have had my daughter to love. So she wanted me to know that the same strong samurai blood of her ancestors flowed through me, too, and that I could push through.
And at that point, you weren't writing the novel, but you're hearing this story now in its full throat for the first time. What was it like for you when you first heard it? Did you feel like you could ask questions, or I would think it would be so difficult to hear that, knowing it's difficult for your mother to tell it?
Yes, and because I think I was mostly in shock, because my mother wasn't one to cry in public, and she just totally broke down and was crying. And it gets to me, even when I just talk about it or when I read from the book, because I hear her voice, and it was like every time she told it, it was like she was reliving it all over again. And she sounded like that young 12-year-old girl just losing. I'm sorry. It's been an emotional week. and losing what she lost and what she saw that day. And it was very hard for me to take in at first. And it was very hard to keep asking her when I was writing the book. But I was very grateful that she was willing to entrust me and my daughter with that, and my daughter was so instrumental in getting this story out there as well. So it's been kind of like a 3-generation of Ishikawa women, I like to say.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, because as you say, when your mother began taking care of you in your 30s, that's when you began to hear the whole story, but not when you decided to write the book. Talk about when you decided to write the book. And again, I think your daughter figures heavily into this.
Yes, she does. My daughter was then in 7th grade, and they had just finished World War II, and she overheard some kids talking about that really cool mushroom cloud picture. And she was so upset, and she came home and she said, "We need to tell them who was under that cloud. That cloud is not cool. And we need to talk about Grandma." And that's when it all started, because that's when I called my mom and I asked for her permission, and she finally gave it to me to tell her story. And she did it, one, because of my daughter, but also all the kids in her class would be around that age that she was. And she really hoped they'd relate to her and they would take it in, and they would all be future voters. And so they would know that nuclear weapons shouldn't be used ever again.
Yuriko, the protagonist in your book, the novel, is about the same age as your mom was in 1945, as you say, and the same age as your intended audience. So this is something that both your mother and you really wanted to do, was to reach that middle school audience.
Exactly. And it falls into with the high school. We've had college, too. But yes, so that they could kind of see it through her eyes. themselves and feel a part of that. And then they could understand what could happen to them and their family if a bomb was used today like that.
Now, your mom passed away before the novel was published, but she did get to read the first drafts. What was her reaction?
She was still in shock that anyone would want to read about a little girl in Hiroshima. And when she looked at that, she kept saying that she was so happy that I honored her papa, but I was honoring her as well. And it was hard for her to see that. And then she said to me, we were sitting there and she looked at it. And when she finished, she looked at me and she said, you know, I never understood why I was the only one still alive from my family. But now I do, because I couldn't tell the story, but you can tell the story. And that's why. And that just meant the world to me. And to be able to know that she knew what was going to be in it, it helped so much for me, because it was so hard a year later when the book did come out and she wasn't there. But at least I feel that she got a piece of it and was happy with what was there.
Did she, you talked about this, saying that now she understood why she, do you think she'd ever expressed that to anyone before, this kind of, the sense of wondering why she was the one who survived?
She may have mentioned it to my father a little bit, but she told me that she really kept a lot of things very close to her vest. She was not one to say a lot. So she just constantly dealt with, I think part of it too, with her post-traumatic stress, which they didn't diagnose back then, but she had a lot of survivor guilt that she dealt with. She was also pretty reckless in the years afterwards, just tempting fate, because she just felt that either she was going to die from radiation within her, or she would just get into an accident, or and that's kind of what I'm trying to deal with the sequel, is try to give an idea of her mentality afterwards. And, you know, there was a lot of prejudice in her own country to the Hibakusha, the atomic survivors. You know, they wouldn't want them to marry into their family because they were afraid that they might have birth defects for their children. And my mom also remembers when she first started telling people that she was from Hiroshima, she had moved to Tokyo after the bombing, they would actually take a step back from her as if radiation was just coming out of her. So she learned to just stop saying she was from Hiroshima, and she kept saying she was from Tokyo. And I think that when she came to the States, she just continued that. She ended up coming to the States because she met my dad in the Air Force. He was stationed near Tokyo in 1959, and they married at the U.S. Embassy in Tokyo. His time for serving was over. They moved to the United States, to Rhode Island, where his family were. And when she came, she had thought that it had been, you know, 14 years later, there might not be as much prejudice, but she was so shocked how much prejudice there was still against the Japanese. And even though she lost in the war, it still was a lot of racial slurs that she got. She also had to deal with some of the family members that she had married into were not happy that she was there. So she decided she would just keep saying Tokyo so that it wouldn't bring any more of a spotlight onto her.
Your mother talked about how important it was that this novel be written for young people so that they would realize what happened. When you do readings and when you get this out, particularly among younger readers, what kind of response do they have?
They are so compassionate, and they ask such thoughtful questions, because they'll say, I had no idea of what a bomb like that could do. I had no idea about the people who were there. And it moves some of them to see a group of middle schoolers or high schoolers. One of the teachers has said to just hear them just silence and being captivated to the story. And then coming up and saying, you know, you made me cry. I did not think about the other side like that. So it does humanize the enemy and kind of brings out, I had one student say that, you know, now we realize they're not so different from us, you know, and that's a great universal truth, even 75 years later, aside from the nuclear weapons, you know, that the ones we might think are different or don't belong or are enemy, they're not different from us so much, because they all have emotions and they all have a heart, and it brings that connection. And I visited Tennessee when I was nominated for one of their awards, and I visited some middle schools. Now, I went to Oak Ridge, which Oak Ridge was one of the Manhattan Project sites, and they actually enriched the uranium for the actual bomb that was then dropped on Hiroshima. And when I met with them to speak with them, and I have a lot of respect for, of course, I'm also half American, and I have a lot of respect for those who worked very hard in their patriotic duty to do what they did at K-25, that plant. And as important, their stories are very important and need to be told, but also the story of what happened to the people under the bomb needs to be told, and that they can coexist. And the students were so great with that, because a lot of them did have relatives who had worked there, and they could understand that both stories being told, one does not negate the other, one does not vilify the other, but they can be told together to be that bridge to bring peace.
Well, the bridge, I think, comes home in other ways, too. I believe you also have talked to at least one young person, but a number, who have related to this story, not because of their experience with atomic weapons, but because they've lost people to war.
Yes, yes. There was a time I went up to your area, and there was a young girl who was from one of the countries, Eastern Bloc countries, and she had come up to me to sign her book, and she had said, I've lost some people. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry. And then she said, I've lost many, many people. And she said, reading this about your mother and her strength of trying to push through or finding some hope gives me hope. And that just took my breath away. I mean, my heart was just feeling for her. And just to know that maybe something helped her to inspire her a little bit of what my mom went through, that just, that really touched my heart to hear things like that. And it's amazing to me. My mother would be, you know, I know she was amazed that anyone would want to read the story, but I'm hoping she can look down and she can see this. And, you know, I'm honored that I'm able to do that for her strength, to show that she was strong, even though she thought she wasn't.
Well, one of the things your novel does, obviously, is humanize that story. But another thing is to help us with the misconceptions. Americans were not told the truth about why we dropped the bomb at the time. Mm-hmm. Now records show that, in fact, the Japanese were in the process of surrender. So all of the things Americans were told at the time were simply not true. I wonder what else, you know, what other misconceptions you think people might still hold about these bombings.
Well, I think, you know, every side tends to vilify the other side. And I know that even from my mom's point of view, they were afraid of Americans. Japanese were vilified. And I also feel I wanted them to know that it wasn't that simple. The whole thing that when they end it with, we dropped the atomic bombs, that ended the war. I think that needs to be stopped being said. I think that it doesn't, the research and the science and the statistics, they're all important. But the main thing now is when you just say that and the war ended, it dehumanizes everyone that was under those two nuclear weapons, and like my family. And I think now we need to say that the bombs were dropped and they fell on human beings. And now what are we going to do so that it doesn't fall onto our families? And I'm hoping that my book can give a semblance of that.
Japanese-American author Kathleen Birkinshaw. The Last Cherry Blossom is the name of the novel. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much.